Thank you for that prayer. It's good to be with you this morning. For the class period, I want to make a report on our Mexican work. From time to time, maybe every 2 or 3 years, even though I don't come and ask the congregation directly for help on that trip, you help my translator every month, Brother Gabino Rico. And I couldn't function without him because he can speak English just about as well as we can. And, of course, he can speak Spanish because that's his native tongue. He can't speak Maya, so from time to time we have to use a brother who can speak Spanish and Maya. Have to go through two translators. But most of the time we're in villages where the Maya do speak Spanish and Maya so that we can work with Brother Gabino. And you also helped my nephew, Eric Cheney, to go on this last trip with me, and I've included him in some of the things that we're going to show this morning. Let's see, how do we get that monitor on there? Do what? Yeah, it's not on. Yeah, it's just a black screen. There you go. Now then, I can see it. May not can read it, but I can see it. Now, as you know, and I've been telling you this, ever since 1993, I've been working with the brethren in Mexico. And I've loved every minute of it because there's still a lot of people there that have not really heard the gospel, the gospel from the New Testament. They were religious. They were connected with especially the Roman Church, the Roman Catholic Church, and a few of the denominational groups. But the denominations are not, I'd say that our brethren are just as strong or maybe are more numerous in a lot of places than the denominational groups. But the Catholic Church has given up on a lot of those villages, especially in the southern part of Mexico, in the Yucatan. And where that vacuum is at, there's people that want to be religious, and they're willing to learn the truth. And so since I've been going to the Yucatan in 2003, three new congregations have been established, and they're working toward a fourth one. Things are progressing there. Our brethren, they're not waiting on us to come down and do campaigns. They're working themselves. And all three of those churches were established through their own efforts. And what I do is I go and I try to help them, help the preachers to be better preachers, to learn more. You know, they've never gone to any kind of school on the Bible. And you can learn about salvation. You can learn a lot of things. But if you're going to teach others, you need to be prepared because questions are going to arise. Things are going to happen that just studying on your own at home may not be the full answer. And so what we're trying to do is help those young men down there and the older men to learn more about how to teach the gospel and how to use other materials. I'm trying to get them to use Bible dictionaries, Bible encyclopedias, and they do have those in Spanish. Even our brethren have translated some into Spanish. And this will help them to be able to... you need to know some background about the Bible. We know this. You cannot study the book of Revelation or Ezekiel or Daniel or parts of Zechariah without having some background. And so we're trying to help give them the background. This trip, let's see, I guess, okay, I always show this picture because that's what a lot of people identify Mexico with. And this, by the way, is in the Yucatan. It's about an hour away from where I go and work with the Mayan brethren. Let's see. Somehow it's not advancing on me here. It is on, by the way. The green is showing. Well, maybe it was just spelled out real slow. These are some of the guys. I took three of my students with me this time. We've started a new program where we're trying to train young men to go into the mission field. We've always encouraged that, but we've very seldom ever taken any. Now, I have in the past when I was working in Europe, in England and Scotland and Wales and places like that. Well, not Scotland, but England and Wales. And we've always taken some with us. But then it got difficult. It got to where you couldn't get any of the students just on their own to volunteer. And so now we've got a program where we require those students are going to have to go on at least one foreign campaign. And I don't raise the money for them. They've got to learn how to go and talk to congregations, look them eyeball to eyeball, and talk to those brethren about what they're going to do, what their intentions are in the going on the trip. And so that worked out real good this time. There's three different guys in the picture there. Trent Thompson, he's from Moulton. Trent's sort of a quiet guy, but when he got down there, he came out of his shell. And I was surprised he could speak a little Spanish, so that made him feel better. And then Ricky Collum, who's from Cherokee, he's the minister there and over in Lauderdale County. And then Eric Cheney, who's my wife Brenda's brother's son. And he grew up in this county, by the way, up at Elkmont. This is Brother Felipe Mukul. I've showed you pictures of him from time to time. He's holding a pair of scissors. Some brethren over at the North Carolina congregation in Lauderdale County decided that they knew that we were having a hard time finding enough room for people to stay that went with me on the trip. And so they donated $5,000 to build two new rooms. And so they were going to let me cut the ribbon on the two new rooms. And they always make a ceremony out of everything. And so that's why he's holding the scissors. Felipe is a cut-up. He is a comedian. But I like to think of him like the Apostle Paul of the Yucatan. Wherever we go, the people know Felipe, they love him, and they respect him because he has helped get most of those congregations in the last 30 years. He's helped get those congregations started. And it had it not been for Felipe and a friend of his, Venancio Pita, who is not Mayan, but loves the Mayan people and can speak their language very well, these two men have started most of those congregations in the Yucatan. He wasn't sleeping. He's always acting. And the kids love him. I call him Pancho Villa. He's preaching here in a little church called Tishkancal. The little congregation has about 35 or 40 people. They're in a village of about 200 people. And so that's a pretty good-sized congregation for a village of 200 people. But every year I go, there's more people there. So that tells me they're working, and they're still converting people. And so this was the first place we went. Now, this is the place where we stay, and this is where I teach from 9 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock every day while we're there. And this gives some of the high school kids have a chance. They go to school early. They go to school at 6, and then by 12, they're out. And then a new shift goes. Their schools are small, the buildings, and so they go in shifts. And so this gives some a chance to sit in for 2 or 3 hours in the morning, and then another group to be able to come and be with us a part of the afternoon. And so even the teenagers are coming to our classes. But we always have a lot of adults, men and women, because we're teaching things that will help the women also to teach in their classes. This is one of my students, I believe it was Ricky Collum, took this picture. This is Gabino and I at the far end teaching. And this is just showing the change in the crowd. It was growing as the morning went by because the mothers now got their kids in school and got all the housework done, and now they're coming. And by the end of the sessions, we have a house full. Just to show you the impact of Felipe Mukul, this is his extended family. And every one of those guys standing there are either nephews or brother-in-laws or Felipe's sons. And every single one of them has a place to preach on Sunday morning. So this is the impact that this man has had just in his own family. But he's got other people that he has converted, and in the way that he knew how to try to help train those men to go out and preach. So that's why I love working with those people. Now there's Eric. He's about to preach. This is a building that our brethren have nearly got finished. It's a congregation about 5 years old, and they were meeting in just a little shed practically. It was just a stick hut with some bamboo leaves on top and palm leaves. And when it rains, they didn't have services because it was like pouring water through a sieve. And so they're getting a building now. Some more brethren over in, well, actually, the brethren that built this building was at Lincoln over here in Madison, well, in Huntsville. And we didn't even ask them for the money. We just showed them how the brethren were worshiping and talking and mentioned that, you know, they're looking forward to someday they can have a building. And that's all I said. And two or three days later, one of their deacons called and said, "You'll never guess what we've just done." And they had taken up money amongst themselves and gave us enough money to build a building. For $5,000 in materials, they'll build their own buildings. And so this one doesn't have a floor in it yet. It's dirt. Doesn't have a top on it, as you'll see in just a moment. Now, the young lady there, she's as light-skinned as we are, and everybody thinks she's my daughter because our skin's about the same color, and everybody else is darker, including her father's. This is Gabino Rico's daughter. We call her Gabby. Gabrielle is her name. And she can speak English as well as we can. And the guys love hanging around her because, and not just because she was a girl, she's a lot older than them. She was 8 or 10 years older than Eric and Trent. But because she could speak English real well. And so they could communicate. They didn't have to drag my translator away. This is Gabino and Gabby. And you can tell he's a lot darker skinned than she is. But it's so funny. And there's Gabino and Felipe, if you want to compare sizes. Felipe makes about 3 of Gabino. And this is Gabino's, or rather Felipe's daughter in the middle. And then 2 sisters, their nieces of Felipe's on the either side. And I've watched these little girls grow up from about 3 or 4 years old to what they are now. And so they're real special to me. They were my little friends when they were just babies. Now this is Tishkenkal. This is where Felipe was preaching. And this building, the brethren have just put a new top on it since we were there, a concrete top. The metal roofs blow off in hurricanes and become flying missiles through the village. And you don't want to get hit by a piece of flying tin in a hurricane. And so they're trying to get concrete roofs on all the buildings so they'll be more permanent. Plus, they'll become like a storm shelter. Obviously, the hurricanes, it's just straightforward winds. It's not like a tornado like you've had in this area and we've had in the Shoals. That's a new classroom that they built at Tishkenkal. And, of course, it's sticks and palm leaves, but they're happy with this because if it's raining, at least they've got a building they can meet in and they can have class in the back of it, get all jammed in a corner. That's some of the brethren. They're 2 of the elders there, and Felipe and myself at Tishkenkal. Ricky Collum is like me. He loves little kids. And so he's holding little twins, a little brother and a little sister. And this is Gabby and Felipe's wife. They're preparing food for us. This is Felipe and the two elders again there at Tishkenkaw. And, of course, I showed that picture once. This is Felipe's daughter. Since she was 15 years old, or 13, she was helping with the children. And now she's the teacher. And she loves teaching the little kids, and they all love her. So during the time that we're preaching in the other part of the building, she has got the little kids. It's like a Bible hour with them. And these are some of the little kids that she works with. They love having their pictures taken. This is where we eat lunch every day after we have the school. It's open air because they don't have any place inside large enough for us to eat. And this is Brother Eliseo. This is Felipe's brother-in-law, and his sister's in the red top there. She's the older sister. And there's a new baby in that little carrier, and Eliseo is really happy over that. That's his first grandchild. Brother Eliseo was a Pentecostal preacher, and Felipe converted him when he married Felipe's sister. And Eliseo is one of the old workhorses. Him and his sons have established two of those three congregations since I've been going there. And he's really a hard-working fella. This is where the church at Hanuco was worshiping and still worshiping as they're building the new building. This is the lot right by that building I just showed you. And that's where they're building their building. And that part they got three walls and left the end open so they could drive a truck in and dump sand and gravel in there to make a floor. And so it's progressing. Now, this is where Eric would be speaking. Now, we got there that evening. They'd already closed that end up that I just showed you was open. And there were men working on scaffolds that are just on poles that they cut out of the jungle. I don't think anybody in here, I know I wouldn't want to work on a scaffold like they were working on. And they were lifting up those big blocks and buckets of concrete and mortar and stuff. And there's only three men that are able to work on this building. So it's taking them a little longer, but they are going to finish the building. There's Felipe and those guys from Hanuku. Now, this is what it looked like when we arrived that evening. That's looking back toward the sunset. And you can see the sun finally came out from behind a cloud there. But I was amazed at how many people came that night. I don't know why I've got Trent's picture here. Maybe I should have had Eric's picture there somewhere. Well, I've got him preaching in the building. Anyway, they accused him of blowing the top of the building off. This is San Ysidro. When we got there, they had just had a rainstorm, a thunderstorm, about an hour before we got there, and it knocked the one big, not a big substation, but the only substation they had there out. There wasn't a light on in the whole village. And we were about an hour late because trees had blown down across the road, and we had to wait for them to get the trees out of the way so we could get to San Ysidro. And believe it or not, those brethren were sitting there in the dark, singing, holding flashlights. And I think, now what would we have done in the U.S. of A. if the power had gone off for an hour? I think we would just packed up and gone home. But they were sitting there singing, waiting on us to come. And so Trent gets to preach in the dark. Now, after that, they finally got the power back on. And these ladies, there's about four or five of them, they're making tortillas. And they're rolling them up in little balls and then patting them out with their hands and putting them on just a piece of metal on top of a fire. And that's how they were making tortillas. Now, this is where Brother Eliseo is preaching. And they're trying to build some classrooms. And so We're trying to get the money to finish that. And when we get that finished, LSAO's congregation is about 150 people. And it's one of the larger, it and Santa Maria, where Felipe preaches, are the two largest congregations in the central part of the Yucatan Peninsula. And each one of them are about 150 to 160 in number every Sunday. And so they're trying to get classrooms there. Okay, this is the building where LSAO preaches, and that's some of his family standing around outside. He was just showing us what they had been doing. Now, this is Cantunalquin. That's a real Mayan name. It means the yellow stone of the sun. And our brethren over in Lauderdale County at Pine Hill, that's where Wayne Barrier, I think he grew up at Pine Hill. Now, I understand he was here before me. I was just telling the brother up in the booth, Wayne's always one step ahead of me every time. When they say, well, there was another Wayne here, I know which Wayne they're talking about. But Wayne and I are good friends. We've known one another for years. And I love what he and his sons are doing, especially in the Pacific Rim and with those people in Malaysia and countries like that. But the brethren at Pine Hill built this building about 3 or 4 years ago. When I first went there, they didn't have anywhere to meet except out under the stars. That's the first time I ever saw anybody at Cantunalquin. They were sitting outside, and it was rather chilly that night for the south part of Mexico. It was down to about 60, 65 degrees, which was T-shirt weather for me, but they were sitting there wrapped up because it doesn't get that cold normally down there. In other words, we call it cool, and they call it cold. Because their temperatures at night's usually around 75 to 80 degrees or more. But the brethren got the building. The brethren themselves built it. They just, Pine Hill bought the materials. But they finished it out. It's taken them 3 years to get it looking like this on the inside. But that's a nice little meeting place. And that's Abraham. His name is Abraham, but that's Abraham. He stands about this tall. Most of the Mayan people stand about that tall. Felipe is a little taller, but most of them, and the women, you mistake a 25-year-old woman to be a teenager because our judgment of height is different than theirs, obviously. And so Abraham, he is he's the preacher there. And he is proud of that building. Abraham has done a good work there. And since they built the building, he's doubled the congregation. Let me just show you how many people were there. Now, that's Brother Arnulfo Santillan. He passed away about 4 or 5 years ago. But he had a dream of someday a school, a permanent school, being in the eastern end of the Yucatan Peninsula, which is more over toward Cancun. There's several congregations in the jungle over toward Cancun. But Brother Arnulfo died before that dream came to pass. But the other slide here, let me back up. That's Arnulfo and a brother. Okay, the brother is the father of this fellow right here, Ronaldo Santillan. And Ronaldo has just, in the last 5 or 6 months, moved into the Yucatan to start that school that his uncle Arnulfo always wanted to start. And Ronaldo is a real dependable young man. I've known him since he was a teenager, and he's been a dedicated preacher. He was the one, you may remember a few years ago, I told you about getting up early Saturday morning and riding a bicycle because he didn't have a car. Riding a bicycle several miles to the mountains and rides as far as he could pedal the bike up in the mountains and then hide it in the brush somewhere and then walk the rest of the way up to a village that was high up in the mountains near Monterey. He would preach Sunday morning. He'd get there late Saturday night. He would preach Sunday morning, and then he would start back down the mountain. And he had to work. He had a job supporting himself, and he had to work Monday. So that was the dedication this young man had at 17. Now, one of his brothers was killed by bandits just a year or two before our Nufo died. And he was hacked to death by machete. And so he was a preacher, too. So the dangers that those fellows face going into uncharted territory is not good. Now, this is the people in Canton O'Keen. This was the crowd we had that night. But now, that's looking from the back to the front. Now, look from the front back. You couldn't get any more people inside. There was about 25 or 30 people standing outside. Those brethren support one another in their efforts down there. And so three or four other villages that had local congregations came to support just that one night that we were going to be there. And I think the church is strong in the Yucatan. Now, this is back to where we were teaching, where I teach every day. This is the one that shows the progression, I think. No, that shows us finishing up. Somebody had told them they heard we Americans singing a song. Well, they wanted to hear us sing that song. And so after the service was over that night, the four of us, well, actually there's five, because we had a brother join us from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And he's been working in Mexico in the north part. He's wanting to get involved in the Mexican work in the south. And so we had a quintet, I guess, and we sung two or three songs. And then we always had fun at night. After we finished going and preaching and coming back, they never go to bed before 12 o'clock, and they get up by 6. That's sort of my schedule. That's my normal schedule. And Brenda's, Brenda going to bed at 12 o'clock is about normal. And I'm not going to tell you when she gets up. But I played the guitar. They found out I could play the guitar, and Brother Ellie Sale brought an old guitar over that no decent musician here in the United States would have hanging on the wall unless he had it made into a clock or something. But anyway, we have fun when we go. This is Trent Thompson, the quiet guy, and we didn't know he was a cut-up, but that's an altar at one of the ruins about 25 minutes away from where we go to Tizimin. And this is where they would offer sacrifice. And so he's laying on the altar. They did have human sacrifice there, by the way. But he was just cutting up. This is a beautiful sunset. Even though the clouds are hanging over it, it's a beautiful scene there in the Yucatan. Now, what I want to do, I don't know how much more time do we have, Brother Larry. 15 minutes. What I would like to do is to give you an opportunity, if you would like to ask questions about the work in Mexico. If you have any questions about what we're doing there. As I said, even though you're not contributing to my trips directly, in another sense, you are. You've been supporting me as a teacher at Heritage, was International Bible College, for at least 25 years or more. I'd say more. About ever since Brother West could probably address that better than any of us, because he had to write the checks out. It's been at least 25 or 30 years, hasn't it, Brother? 1973? Well, how about 40 years plus? That would be right, wouldn't it? 40 years plus, maybe like 42 years plus. So that's how long that we've been connected in my work and your support to make that possible. And because you support me in my work, it gives me an opportunity to go and work in mission trips like this. And so you have a part, even though I don't come and ask directly for funds to help me on the trip. There's three or four congregations over in Lauderdale County that always do that. And so There's no need to go and ask somebody else, can y'all help me on the trip? But you help in an indirect way because you've helped pay my salary. We teachers at the school have to raise our own support. The school set the amount, and the board of trustees set the amount. But then we had to raise it. And so, in a sense, I don't cost the school a penny to teach there because congregations like you have helped me all these years to make it possible. But wherever I go, whatever I do in the Lord's work, you're a part of it because of the relationship that we've had. And so I can't thank you enough from the bottom of my heart. I thank you so much for having helped me these many years. And I hope I have many more years that you can help me too. Hope, yes, sir. Well, he's working part-time. He's like an assistant minister for the Cloverdale congregation where Brother Jack Flowers works. Some of you may have known Brother Jack's father. Right now, I can't remember his first name, but there was a Brother Flowers here in North Alabama for several years that was an old standby preacher. And Eric's working with Jack at Cloverdale in that, but he wants... He's already told people he wants to, when Uncle Wayne can't go and work in Mexico, he wants to be the one that's working with the people. And so I've got a feeling he's going to be wanting to go with me on all those trips to develop a relationship with those people and learn their culture. You've got to learn the people's culture when you go into another area. If you don't, you're not going to be very effective. You get there and you don't know anything about the people, and there may be something you do in an innocent way that's totally offensive to them because of their culture. Brenda and I had that experience when we went to England. Words that we use here have a different meaning than they have there. And Brenda one time was talking to this British lady about, they scream bloody murder. Well, in England, bloody is a curse word because to them, that was a word that was handed down from the Crusader days when the Crusaders would come back and they would swear by the blood of the cross. And so it became a curse word. And so our neighbor, Pat, she says, "Oh, Brenda, you've just cursed." And Brenda said, "What did I do? What did I say?" Well, Brenda didn't know that word was... to them, an offensive word. So that's just one example of how you can get cross-wired if you don't understand all their terminology. And I'm sure there's been bigger blunders than that made in the mission field. So that's why I'm hoping I can keep Eric going with me. But he loved the trip. I don't think he'd ever flown on a plane before. So he had a lot of new experiences there. But I appreciate the congregation here helping Eric to be able to make that trip because he got right into it. And all three of the guys that I took, I didn't have a disappointment with any of the three that went. And I was so happy over that because all of the guys have totally different personalities. And when you take three guys like that have not been thrown into a situation where they have to live together for a week or more, then you don't know what's going to happen. Yes? Okay. Well, whoever it was, I want to thank you for being able to do that because it helped him to be able to help understand the people and hopefully... I've got to have somebody. I mean, you know, I'm 71 plus, and I know I'm not going to be able to go forever. I'd hate to see that work just come to an end because we've got so many years invested in it. And there's not many Americans show up down there. This is not a tourist area. And anybody that would like to go and find out, you are welcome to go with me. You sort of rough it. Even though they built those two new rooms, I kept my old room that's about the size of, a regular bathroom at home. It's not very big at all. It's about maybe 6 or 7 feet wide and about maybe 10 feet long. It is. It's just a small area, but it's big enough for a bed and a table, and that's all I need it for anyway. Because the rest of the time I'm not in there, and so I'm going to keep my old quarters. Any more questions about the work in Mexico? Yes, sir. They do have some in Maya, in some of the Maya-speaking villages. Where they're still working on that church building in Unuku, those people, there's some people there that can't speak Spanish. Some of the older people only speak the Maya. And so we have to use, when we go there, we have to use many times another translator. In other words, Gabino translates into Spanish what I say, and then somebody else translates it from Spanish into Maya. And that's not the best situation because, you know, every time it's translated, you lose some of the original meaning. I mean, that's just a given because of the way the languages are constructed. And it would be better if we had somebody who could speak English and Maya. But we don't have to have that. And Brother Barrier and some of those people that travel into Asia, sometimes they have to do the same thing. They have to find someone who can translate from English into their language, but he doesn't know the local dialect. And so somebody there who knows what this brother is translated into, he puts it into the dialect. That's because we're not inspired. You know, the apostles, they didn't have to have translators. When they went out on the day of Pentecost, when they preached, you know, the people were amazed because they said, how can we hear in our own tongue in which we were born? And you count up, and there was about 14 or 15 different nationalities listed, more than the apostles that were there. But they all heard the language, or in their own tongue. And so God unscrambled what he scrambled, at least for that situation. And the apostles, when they preached, he unscrambled what he scrambled back there at the Tower of Babel in Genesis chapter 11. You know, they all had one language, and then all of a sudden, they didn't have the same language anymore because God divided them, separated them, mixed their languages. And so we don't have that privilege. And these folks, Brother Bill Beck, I don't know if any of you remember him, but Brother Bill Beck used to work in Thailand. I'll remember it in a minute. And he was always amused that these folks who claim to speak in different tongues, you know, the Pentecostal-type churches, who claim to speak in other tongues, they had to go to the same schools to learn how to speak the Thai language just like he did when he went there to work in the mission field. Well, if they were inspired to speak all these different languages, why couldn't they speak Thai? You know, why did they have to have a translating school to teach them how to speak in that language? And so he was always amused at that. That they claimed they could speak in these other tongues, but they couldn't speak in the tongue that they were going to work in. But the apostles could, and that was the good thing about that. Any more questions? I guess, is my time up? Or okay. Well, then we won't belabor the point. And thank you for letting me share this with you. Where does this go? Well, I can move it. I don't...